Welcome to the Near Post Local, where too much football, or futsal, is never enough. I'm Peter Funnell. The Futsal Nationals are underway. Games have been played on Monday and today. A galaxy of players, so many thrilling games. Go to the Capital Football website for a link to the Futsal Nationals site and look at the draws for each age group, pick a game and go and watch. You can't help but get caught up in the thrill of a terrific game that does so much for the development of young football players. All the finals are on Friday at the AIS. Capital Football does a great job organising this very large and prestigious competition. More of the Futsal Nationals next week. This program is, as always, jam-packed with information. Tonight, a very interesting piece from an organisation in the USA called Soccer Plus FC. And the subject is, what is a football curriculum? A lot of coaches are asking that question following all the rattle from the FFA and Han Berger over the release of the much-awaited new national football curriculum. Does your club have a curriculum to guide coaches and parents? Does the Capital Football High Performance Program have a detailed curriculum by age group and gender? And what do you think would be the answer if you asked them to show it to you tomorrow? Football, like so many other sports, is beginning to claim our children, players, for the best part of the calendar year. A very good example of that is the Capital Football High Performance Program, which now makes contact with players for the best part of a year. All sports want to hold on to their participants. For players hoping to go on to higher levels in football, it's already a reality. So it's more important than ever to know what these organisations intend to do and have some means to evaluate the worth of their programs, help the young players make good decisions, keep some vestige of life balance, ensure they get a liberal and balanced education, and advise and guide your children who are interested in pursuing these football programs. So where's the curriculum, please, and can I see it? Is a really good question to ask. From this start point, we move forward on a related theme. Our interview tonight is a collection of very interesting pieces with that wonderful football coach, Arsene Wenger, coach of Arsenal FC in the English Premier League. Yes, I know, not everyone is a fan of Arsenal, but you just gotta be a fan of Arsene Wenger. You recall our interview with the remarkable and much-respected co-founder of Curver International, Alfred Galustian, the doyen of technical coaches. Now there's an organisation that does have a curriculum. Alfred is a technical coach who has been engaged by the FFA to coach our elite coaches. He remarked on the high standing with which he holds Arsene Wenger. High praise indeed. Arsene Wenger has a lot to say that is worth listening to and reflecting upon as Premier League men's and women's clubs in the ACT gear up to begin trials for the forthcoming season. What he has to say informs us at every level of the game, junior to senior, community-based to high performance. They're all as important as each other. 2010 season is, if you're not aware of it already, already underway. But let's begin with Arsene Wenger's response to a simple question put to him on a television program in the UK not long ago. How do you build a player? He means a really good player. He leaves you in absolutely no doubt.
No. It's in fact very simple. You build a player like you build a house with a basement. You know, the basis of the player is the technique. You get that between 7 and 14 years of age. If you have no technical skill at 14, you can forget it. You will never be a football player. Then the second part is the physical aspect. The first floor is the physical talent of the player. Unfortunately, that is decided between 14, 17, where you see, okay, we'll be quick enough, strong enough, and then the second floor is the tactical aspect. Does he understand the game? How can I relate to you if you have the ball? Do I understand where to go? And then the final part that is decided at 18, 19 years of age is how much do I want to be successful? Am I ready not to go to a disco on Friday night because on Saturday I want to have a good game? You're smiling, but you know you went to a disco. And That's the final floor and what I call the roof. No, if you have no roof, it rains in. And when it rains in, the house collapses.
Now let's listen to Soccer FC on the subject of what is a football curriculum.
Hello, welcome to the Big Picture Curriculum. My name is David Newberry from Soccer Plus FC. Recently, Tony DiCicco and I have engaged in a series of workshops aimed at encouraging youth soccer clubs to adopt a player development philosophy and a curriculum approach. This curriculum model has been adapted from an educational model used in schools for the purpose of providing a youth soccer club with the infrastructure to plan for and manage learning. In visiting hundreds of soccer clubs across the United States, Soccer Plus FC consultants have had the opportunity to review and research the educational practices employed by youth soccer organizations. This research has enabled us to conclude that very few clubs have a true curriculum. Number one, what are we trying to achieve? This is the focus of this presentation. Number two, how do we organize learning? The second presentation provides an in-depth overview of coaching methodology, how we can change the learning environment, the importance of incorporating research and child development science, and of course, content. And the third presentation, how will we achieve our aims, explores the role assessment plays in improving the performance of players and coaches, and how clubs can engage parents in the learning experience. The term curriculum is most commonly associated with teaching in the school environment, and in general terms, a curriculum consists of everything that promotes intellectual, personal, social, and physical development of the participants. When transferred to sport, the term curriculum is usually related to a book of activities and games organized in such a way to aid a coach plan a practice session. Rarely do these curriculum books engage the reader in a rationale for selecting such activities, or describe how coaching methodology is as important as the activities themselves. There are five primary aims to the curriculum model. The first aim is to establish equal opportunity for all members. Although many clubs aim to provide equal opportunity, very few achieve this aim. Common practice is best described as offering equal rights to participation, meaning each child has the opportunity to practice and play a similar amount of time. Randomly assigning players to teams is common practice, although this often creates significant inequalities, particularly when we consider the disparity in experience between coaches. It is extremely important that we establish standards both for the player and coaches. The standards should not only govern behavior, but also performance expectations at the end of each stage of development. Players should be assessed against established criteria for individual skills and tactical knowledge of the game, and this helps coaches focus on what should be taught to the players and when. Tied into a rigorous assessment program, the coaches and the club can effectively help individual players in their progression and ensure methods and content match the ability of the players. A true curriculum provides continuity and coherence in our approach, ensuring all coaches, regardless of experience or qualifications, have a working understanding of player development and access to approved coaching materials will provide the foundations for their coaching decisions. In addition to teaching young players the correct skills and techniques, we should also strive to promote their understanding. This is best demonstrated when we ask players to perform skills learned in practice in a game situation where the coach has little or no control. Adopting a curriculum provides parents and coaches with confidence in the club. It is universally accepted that to ensure progression and management of learning, a school must have a curriculum. Unfortunately, we apply a different logic when it comes to youth sport. Curriculum provides external credibility to parents, players, and coaches that the soccer organization is planning for the development of players. The second element to consider are the outcomes. The curriculum model begins with the end in mind. By having a clear understanding of what we're trying to achieve, we are able to make good decisions to enhance the educational experiences for coaches, players and parents. Although not every child will achieve the standards of performance and knowledge at the end of each stage of development, we should strive to achieve an improvement in every child's performance and understanding. We also need to appreciate rate of development differs between children of the same age, and late developers are most at risk if assessment becomes absolute, as many tryout processes are. The role of the coach and the responsibility of the club must be far more reaching than just coaching better players. The Soccer Plus FC curriculum model supports the role the coach plays in developing self-confidence, self-esteem and self-assurance, all characteristics that will help the child in later life. The experience a child has during their formative years of participation may shape future behaviors and inclinations to participate in sport and physical activity later in life. Establishing commitment with children and their parents to engage in the learning process is essential. We want players to be enthusiastic and eager to learn. Encouraging parents to foster a willingness and interest to learn outside of the typical club practices is imperative for players keen to progress and attain high performance standards. All too often in sports, we focus on team success to the exclusion of individual development. Although players will naturally gravitate to one position on the field, we should give them the opportunity to play a variety of positions. We must remember that in order to achieve team success, we must have players that individually have the confidence and skill to perform their role. The third element to consider is the focus. Each stage of the model promotes a different developmental focus. The interplay between physical, cognitive, emotional, psychological, and social variables. Unlike many sports in the United States, the coach in soccer plays greater role on the training ground, but significantly less role during the game. In order for players to feel confident and competent in the game situation, they must be given the opportunity to experiment and become creative. Sport has a significant role to play in the development of children's attitudes towards each other. Time must be set aside formally to teach the children leadership, sportsmanship, and respect for others. Dealing with adversity in training will often lead to success on the field and in the classroom.
Now let's listen to an excellent interview conducted by Craig Foster of the SBS World Game with Arsene Wenger just recently. Everything Arsene Wenger has to say here is transferable to our own footballing environment, particularly here at the Premier League and at club level. He has a lot of good points to make. The use of statistical analysis, the style with which clubs play, the notion that you've got to find other players when things aren't going too well, rather than perhaps developing your own, and so on. Have a listen to this. This fella knows a thing or two.
Arsene, thank you for your time. I know it's a whirlwind trip and they've certainly got you working hard over here in Malaysia. Firstly, you don't get much time for leisure and so on outside of the game, I understand, but it must be nice to come to different regions of the world and see the fans' response. They really love you here.
It's great for me because I speaking about football, what I love, but I don't have the other side of it, the pressure to win football games, you know. Right. So that is quite enjoyable and relaxing. And what is interesting as well is to realize how much people watch English football and love the game that is played in England.
You're also here with Castrol to talk about their performance index. Now, it's something of great interest in Australia, the statistical and analytical side of the game. You're a big advocate of that. Obviously, with the engineer's background, helps a lot. But they call you the professor. You're seen as a very analytical style of manager. How important is the use of data and statistics in top-level football?
I think football is a game of opinions. And I always tried to make the right decisions. Opinion is not enough. When you want to make a decision, you want to make sure that you know as much as you can about the game and about the player. So I just believe the data do not make the decision in your place. They help you to make a better decision. And it's easier to know that the player has physical qualities, technical qualities, And after that, of course, you transform that into your own knowledge and to try to make the right decision. But that's why I believe it is crutches. It helps the manager to make good decisions.
Of course, you have to have your own philosophy, and you plug your type of players into that. Tell us about the Arsene Wenger philosophy. It's known and loved around the world.
My philosophy is, first of all, I believe that every manager needs to have a global vision of the game he wants to play. And to make it as simple as possible, I believe I'm a great lover of a game based on technical skill, mobility, movement. I like a dynamic game, and as well I like a creative game. So of course I try to build teams and to scout players who are built around that kind of skills.
And what about the modern football right now? Spain are on top, playing some fantastic football, and Barcelona of course won the Champions League. That was seen as, if in one sense, a vindication of your philosophy, which is quite funny. How do you react to that?
I believe Barcelona is an example of different aspects I like in the game. First of all, it is a consequence of a manager who stayed a long time at the club and dictated the philosophy of the game. And Pep Guardiola has done a fantastic job, but he has inherited a philosophy and the culture of a game that has been dictated by a former coach, Johan Cruyff. So it shows you how important it is to, in every club, to have a way to behave. The second thing is that the success of Barcelona this year is the reward of a positive philosophy of a game that is fantastic for football in the world, and certainly many football lovers were happy with their success. But it shows you as well, to stay in the history, you need winning combined with style, art with efficiency. That's what Barcelona personalized this year. And the third major information we get, when you do not win, people always say you have to buy. Barcelona last year did not buy. They even sold their star player, Ronaldinho,
yeah.
And they bought maybe Alves and one or two other players, but the core of their team was there. And that shows as well that what usually people say, you have to buy when you don't win, is not true.
Art over substance, style and substance is something at the top level of the game these days, it seems anyway. There's only a few clubs really trying to uphold, and you're one of them. Of course, Barca did it. Is it more difficult when teams, clearly in football, it's easier to set up a team defensively?
Well, Craig, it's more difficult when you don't win,
yes.
You know, because people want style. People want first to win.
Mm.
And I refuse always to go into the debate that or you play well or you win. I always feel that winning is the consequence of playing well.
Exactly.
Respecting the manager's personality. So I always refuse that. But of course, if you try to play well and you don't win, people say, come on, let's get rid of that and try to win. But it doesn't show that you win with that. And I believe that if the big clubs have a responsibility is to combine an attractive game with efficiency. Because if we think the big clubs start to say we have to play ugly to win, where does football go?
Exactly.
And that's why I always try to think that is obvious. And Milan won.
Sure.
By combining style with efficiency. Real Madrid won by combining style with efficiency. So it means the big clubs have that responsibility. Why is Brazil loved all over the world by people who love football? Because not only because they win, because they play the kind of game people love.
And so do you. But it seems these days that it's almost more difficult to play that sort of game. Because the physical capacities of the players seemingly, and the space and time has become at such a premium. I'm interested in, what's your view, what is the qualities of the modern footballer, the finest, And how has football changed in your period of management since the late 80s up to now?
What I must say in general, let's say the defensive quality goes up because of physicalness. But what is great in the evolution of a game, the defensive quality goes up, the response is of the evolution of a game is they adapt to it and find new solutions. So it is always a fight against each other, and that's why I believe in the last 20 years the game has developed always in a better way, because in fairness I believe television has helped a lot. Because if you don't behave well now, how did you stop the Maradona, the Pelé, by kicking them off the pitch? Today that doesn't exist anymore. Why? Because of the video protection. And the purely technical aspect of a defense getting stronger finds always a response from the creative side that tries to find solutions and adapt the technical skill to counter it.
Now let's go to a BBC interview with Arsene Wenger, where he takes us a little further forward in his thoughts about football, clubs, players, analysis of games, relationship with referees and so on. All of this information is completely transferable to our environment here in the ACT.
When you first came over to England, you... correct me if I'm wrong here, you seemed much more dispassionate, and maybe you brought some of that Japanese control from Grand Crusade. And it felt like you were much more controlled on the touchline, whereas now you're much more animated and much more emotional. Did something happen, or is that just over time you've decided to let it out a bit more?
No, I feel when you start a job somewhere, you're always more relaxed, you know. And because you have a good distance, you just come in, you have not all the pressure that slowly gets into you, and slowly you're sucked in that. I try to convince myself sometimes that it's only football, but then again, that doesn't last a long time, because I want to be successful in what I do, and because you want to do as well you can as probably anybody who works in a job, you know. And you always feel you don't dedicate enough time to that, because you always feel you could do more.
You must have a wife and a daughter. You must have a very understanding family, I think.
Yes, yeah. I'm lucky on that front, because like for every passionate people, I believe that people who suffer are people who live with them.
Mark Hatley, a striker you had at Monaco, said that we would never figure you out. There was always a piece of Arsene Wenger that he couldn't understand. Now, that may have just been Mark, but
not only Mark, that's me as well.
But do we see the real Arsene Wenger? Because when you're caught post-match in that high-pressure environment, do the English public really see the real Arsene Wenger, or is there another side we don't see?
No, there's always... when you speak in a post-match interview, you speak already again to your players, to your fans, and most of the time you have already prepared yourself to face the different questions and not to be too alarmist. And sometimes through patches you can lose it, you know.
But you cannot believe that nobody saw it from the bench, all blind.
He didn't deserve to be sent off, and that referee has been cheated.
That's strong words to say that they're lying, that they didn't see it.
Of course they lie.
But sometimes after the game, you know, as well, only human beings, and sometimes you are upset by decisions that go against you, and you do not always control your reactions.
Money's never been your motivation, you've often said that. So you've never wanted the checkbook that Manchester United shows. It doesn't affect your team's performance particularly. Is it because it doesn't give you the satisfaction if you can just buy a
team? I feel that the job of a manager is to do as well. If I lose every year £150 million, the club goes nowhere, you know, the club is bankrupt. And I think the target of a real good manager is to achieve success with what is available. You would like to think that at Newcastle, at Aston Villa, at Arsenal, you work only with the funds that have been created by your natural potential. And natural potential I call sponsorship, gates, TV money. And all the rest should not be allowed.
cause a few problems somewhere?
Well, maybe, but at the moment it's not like that.
You've always been a great advocate of using technology during matches. That doesn't seem like it's going to happen now. FIFA seem to have put the lid on that for a while.
Well, there again, I would love FIFA to have much more an innovative approach, because I believe as well, when you love football, you want justice to be done as much as possible. You cannot accept anymore that a game was watched by a billion people. Everybody sees that there is goal, just the referee doesn't see it and you cannot help him. And that's unfair. And it's not, I personally think it would give the referee more credit and more respect.
Michel Platini, your countryman, suggesting now we have more assistant referees on the goal line. Is that the answer, or is it just somebody else?
I believe it could add more confusion as well. And if you need five people to decide, why not replace it by one machine and one guy behind the machine who can just say, it works so well in rugby. But you could already give better examples that cheating is not rewarded. And I believe somewhere that elite football has that responsibility. Rather than saying Maradona has scored with his hand and he got away with it, rather saying, no, I'm sorry, that was a handball. And the guy says, yes, goal has not been given. Because after people say, yeah, you see, but you win the World Cup by doing that, so I can do it as well. People say, who are against the video, yes, out of 100 mistakes, you will get it a few times wrong. But instead of making 50 mistakes, if you make only 20, you already improved the problem.
Now, is it your background? I don't know if people know that you've got a degree in engineering and a master's degree in economics. So is that fascination of, you know, measures and numbers, is this what really draws you to player analysis?
I like football and I like to know more. And, you know, we have big responsibilities to pick the team, because we have every time, I don't know how many 100,000 people who pick the team as well. So on this program, Performance Index, you have the passing quality of the player. And you can say, if a player, for example, wins in every game more balls than another player, is defensively good. So that's not a coincidence.
So would you sign or drop a player based on the information that managers now receive?
I would not sign a player on that, but I could drop a player on that.
Mm. True, you once studied a match for 7 hours.
I don't know. I'm capable of every crazy thing and of every crazy mistake as well, but it's an obsession, this job, and every manager within that job would tell you that, you know. And the difficulty in our job is always to go to the root of the problem. And that is very, very difficult. That demands a lot of analysis before you make the right decision.
Two managers in Europe at top clubs, have achieved more than 10 years service. That's yourself and Sir Alex Ferguson. Mm. Is there a quality that you two men share, or is that just a consequence of your success?
I believe that we share passion, and we are given the time and manage to change the teams and at the right time.
So you have to reinvent your teams?
You have always to try to move forward. I believe that the manager in the modern game has to prepare better than a player.
You don't drink, or very, very sparingly?
I don't. I prepare like I played the game. And I've seen very early in my age what kind of problems alcohol can cause, you know, and
in change of personality or fitness,
or destroying people. If you put the wrong petrol in the car, you don't go very far. And for a human being, it's exactly the same. I'm always thinking I have to prepare, but if I pick myself on Saturday, I have a chance to play well, you know, and I really prepare physically to be ready to play. Of course, I know, unfortunately, I will not. But I think that kind of attitude is the right one.
Do you want to talk about referees?
What a subject.
Yes, that was my tackle. Yeah, you've had an interesting relationship. Because we were talking about officials and the mistakes they make and how technology could help them. Isn't making a mistake just part of the game?
It's not part of the game. It's part of the fact that we are all human beings and we make mistakes, but it's not the part of the game. That's the part the human being brings into the game. And I believe as well what we have to try as managers is not to put them under pressure before the games, because that's very unfair. And some of the things that's going on sometimes before the game, and that they are never punished by the FA, and I find them really unfair. For example, I hope we'll have a good referee. I hope we'll not make the mistake we had made last time against us, you know. Frankly, before a game, I don't know who is a referee of a game. I always presume that the guy is honest and tries to do as well his job. You want commitment and you want fair commitment.
Do you ever see yourself anywhere else? Because you're so identified with Arsenal now. And it was, I can't remember if this is true or not, but you said you couldn't remember life at the clubs before Arsenal at one point.
Well, yes, because you're so deeply involved. I always say that a manager has a love story with the club and he has to behave like it will be a love story forever, but not be stupid enough to believe that it will never end. It could end at any minute, but you have to behave like it will last forever.
Well, you've been lucky because plenty have had a one-night stand and been out along their suitcase.
I'm very lucky in my life on that, because I think in I made 7 years in Monaco. That was quite a very, very long time, and now 11 years here, so 18 years, two clubs, that's quite lucky.
Can you see beyond management? Can you take it easy out to maybe be chairman or something here?
Not really, no. Because what I like, in fairness, what I prefer is in the morning, I've been on the pitches out there, is to walk out there and spend time with my players. That's what I love, and to sit here in the office is not what I love.
What an absolutely sensational coach and individual is Arsene Wenger. No wonder he's held in such high regard. You'd be very hard to please if you didn't find something in that interview that didn't resonate with you if you love football. Well, that's it for the show this week. Get to the Futsal Nationals, they're on all this week. Finals are on Friday. Too good to be missed. If you're getting to the near post, get there first. No sense in getting there second. The ball will be somewhere else. Enjoy your football and futsal. See you next week. Ta-da.